God damn! You're telling me one son of a bitch killed Zeke and Junior, then sent you two running?
Cantrell slammed a chair against the wall to vent his anger.
Who the hell is he? I should have shot down that son of a bitch when he walked in here.
Something told him that big, quiet man was trouble. He should have followed his instincts. Now he was short two men.
Damn it!
Oh, we'll get him. He ain't but one man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right, Doc. He's one man who sent you running. But we'll get him, all right. We'll damn sure get him.
Mace held no feeling of remorse for the deaths of Junior and Zeke. His anger came from seemingly being bested by Jason Storm.
Yeah, we'll fish him out. Most likely he's done run for it, but if he ain't, we'll find him. Bob, you and Lacey go down the back alley. Me and Doc will work down the front.
Line up close behind the riverbank, Tom Austin waited and watched, a tangled thread of thoughts running through his brain. The responsibility of his position as deputy sheriff weighed heavily upon him, and he knew he should have taken more control of the situation Paradise found itself in. But he felt a natural tendency to fall in behind Jason Storm. The man appeared to be in control. It occurred to him then. No one in town knew very much about Jason, where he came from, what he had done. He just appeared one day looking for a place to settle down and seemingly a place where he had little contact with the townsfolk. Now he had come here to avenge the atrocities visited on the people of Paradise. Further thoughts were interrupted by the two men who suddenly appeared in the doorway of the saloon. Tom hesitated. He'd never shot at a man before. Jason had cautioned both him and Joe to shoot to kill, the same as if executing a mad dog. Still, Tom hesitated as Mace and Doc stepped out the door. His conscience caused him to question his duty as a deputy and the rights of any criminal. He made a hasty decision and rose.
Stand where you are! This is Deputy Austin, and you're under arrest. Drop your gun belts and raise your hands.
At first, unable to believe his ears, Mace exchanged an astonished glance with Doc. Then, their natural reactions took over as both outlaws pulled their Colts. Tom was an easy target. He collapsed on the bank with one bullet in the shoulder and one in his leg. Almost as quickly, Joe Galt joined the battle and sent a series of shots flying toward the saloon. Mace and Doc ducked back inside. Thanks to the fact that Joe had swapped his double-barreled shotgun for a Henry rifle that Jason had brought, one of his shots caught Doc in the side.
Damn!
Doc fell heavily on the floor.
I'm shot!
Mace stood over the wounded man, his anger rising almost to a rage. He couldn't help being perturbed at Doc for letting himself get shot.
How bad is it, goddammit?
I don't know. It's hurting something awful.
Well, can you walk?
I don't think so. It's starting to bleed pretty heavy, but I'll try maybe with a little help.
Mace studied his brother for a few moments. Doc getting shot didn't help matters one damn bit, and Mace knew he had to do something quickly. The big stranger had evidently gathered some help. The shot that Doc got came from the blacksmith, maybe. At least he no longer had to worry about the deputy, but he was not going to regain control of the town until that big man was taken out.
I best go out the back and catch up with Bob and Lacey.
Well, what about me? You're going to have to help me. I don't think I can walk on my own.
You ain't no good to me in that shape. I'll help you to the back, and you can stay here and make sure nobody gets our horses.
I'm going to need that doctor down the street. This thing is bleeding and paining me plenty.
We'll get him for you just as soon as we take care of that son of a bitch that shot Junior and Zeke. You just keep an eye on them horses.
Mace got his brother situated by the back door of the saloon. Then he hurried down the alley after Bob and Lacey. Jason Storm knelt at the corner of the little whitewashed house that Dr. Albert Taylor used as an office and home. He saw no sign of the doctor, but his horses and buggy stood in the stables when Jason left there. He heard the shots fired after Tom called for Mace to surrender. It was easy to recognize the report of Joe Galt's Henry rifle, and things got quiet afterward. Jason was in the process of working his way building to the head of the street in an effort to see what happened. He put Joe and Tom along the riverbank in front of the store so they could use it for cover and have a safe place to use their rifles in case the outlaws showed up out front. He honestly expected the remaining four to come down the back alley after it.
Well, ain't the first time I've been wrong.
He prepared to move from the corner of the doctor's house to the other side of the alley and Joe Galt's forge. He dove for cover behind the blacksmith's anvil, rolling over until he had the anvil and a large wooden tub filled with water squarely between him and his assailant.
Damn! If I make any more mistakes like that, Biscuit's gonna be an orphan.
They had him pinned down behind the anvil. His only avenue of escape was to crawl backward toward the street out front. And that was not a position he wished to be caught in if the other two outlaws were circling around to come in behind him while trying to keep an eye on the two in front of him. He constantly looked over his shoulder, wondering when he was going to be attacked from that direction. Thinking of Tom Austin's ill-advised approach, he decided that it might be the ploy he needed right then. He cupped his hand around his mouth.
You two throw down your guns! Come out from behind the outhouse with your hands in the air! I won't shoot!
Lying flat on his belly behind the outhouse, Bob Dawson couldn't believe it.
All right, here's my hands in the air!
Dawson got up on one knee to give himself a better shot. When he peeked around the corner of the outhouse to aim, he saw the barrel of Jason's rifle waiting for him. The bullet smashed into his chest before he could pull the trigger. He reeled over backward.
Bob! Jesus!
Lacey Jenkins looked down at Bob Dawson's lifeless body sprawled on the ground, but he had no more time to think about his partner. Jason threw a steady barrage of rifle shots, then pistol shots at the outhouse. In short order, Lacey decided it was too hot a spot in which to remain, but he was afraid to run. There was no cover between the outhouse and the Hatfields building. Still, he didn't see any other option. The big man had to reload sometime, though, and that would be Lacey's chance. Lacey was confident he could kill him before he had a chance to reload. Across the way, Jason had thought the exact same thought. He saved one cartridge in the chamber of his Winchester. Certain that the battle had turned in his favor and that this was his chance, Lacey scrambled to his feet and charged out from behind his bullet-riddled fortress.
Now, you son of a bitch! Cock!
Jason's carefully aimed shot slammed into his forehead. Watching the shooting from behind a large barrel at the rear of Hatfield's store, a suddenly shaken Mace Cantrell realized the magnitude of the killings. He was now alone. His gang of six men was reduced to himself and his wounded brother.
Who is that son of a bitch?
He was not really sure how many he was up against, but his main worry was that relentless avenger crouching now in the blacksmith shop.
Oh, if I can get a clean shot at him, it'll be easy to take care of the rest of them.
He felt he had nothing to fear from the townsfolk. The deputy was already taken care of. The others would probably run. He decided to take the shot, even though it was not completely clear and it would give away his position. Sighting his pistol on the largest area of body he could see through the rails around the forge, he tried to take steady aim. To his alarm, he found he couldn't keep the pistol from wavering off its target. Desperate to get the shot off, he pulled the trigger anyway. Just inside the blacksmith shop, Jason flinched when the bullet ricocheted. Unseen to Mace, he had rolled over behind the barrel and pinpointed the source while hurriedly reloading his weapon.
Oh, damn!
Realizing that his protection was not that good, Mace decided his only option was to run for it. A new sensation had struck him. Fear. He had never had occasion to experience the gut-wrenching feeling he now felt growing in his own stomach. He always had the advantage of plenty of help around him, men who lived by the gun. This was a different sensation now that he stood alone against a killing machine and the tall, stoic stalker who methodically had wiped out his gang. He desperately wanted Jason Storm dead, but he was no longer willing to chance a face-off with him. Mace decided his only option was to run for the saloon.
Oh, the hell with this town!
Jason suspected that the shooter had retreated, but he hesitated to rush after him until he knew the whereabouts of gang member number 6. Guns reloaded, he crept carefully to the edge of Galt's corral.
Jason!
He saw Joe Galt struggling to help Tom Austin walk.
Tom's got shot.
Joe helped the wounded man sit down on a hay bale.
We need to get him to Doc Taylor's if Doc's still there.
How bad is it, Tom?
I don't know. They got me twice. The shoulder and this one in my leg.
He leaned back a little to let Jason take a look at the wounds.
I know you told me to shoot first and ask questions later. I guess I messed up.
Yeah, well, I seen a lot of gunshot wounds in my time. You'll be okay. You're gonna be gimpy as hell for some weeks, but you should be all right. Joe can take you to the doctor's house. And I ain't seen a sign of him since the shooting started, but I have an idea he's hiding out in his house.
What are you gonna do?
We've got 2 more to take care of before this nest of snakes is finished. I'm heading for the saloon. It's where they're holed up.
One of them's wounded. I'm pretty sure I hit one of them when they ran back to the door.
Well, that helps. I better get going.
Joe Galt watched the broad back of the imposing hunter as Jason left the corral. He turned to lend his arm to Tom.
Where in the hell did that man come from?
Don't nobody I talk to know where he came from or what he's doing here. I'm just damn glad he's here right now.
Keep an eye on that alley, Doc. If that big bastard shows his face, shoot it off!
As Mace threw his saddlebags on his horse, Doc tried to get up from behind the back stoop to get to his horse.
You gonna have to help me, Mace. I can't make it by myself.
Mace glanced hurriedly in his brother's direction, taking notice of Doc's shirt and trousers, which were now soaked with blood.
You're hurt bad, Doc. I don't think you can make it. And if you're going with me, you're gonna have to make it on your own. Rest of the boys are all dead, and I ain't gonna wait around here till they come for us.
Mace, you ain't leaving me here, are you? You can't leave me here. I'm your brother.
Mace stepped up in the saddle.
If you can get on that horse, you can go with me, but I ain't waiting around for you. You ain't no good to me in that shape you're in.
He wheeled his horse, grabbed the lead rope on his pack horse, and headed around the south side of the saloon, leaving his brother behind.
You bastard.
He couldn't believe his brother would desert him. His initial reaction was anger. He picked up his pistol and aimed it at the spot between Mace's shoulder blades, but he couldn't pull the trigger.
God damn!
When he and Mace had ridden off to war, he had promised his mother that he would take care of his younger brother. In all the years since, Doc had always watched over Mace. Through many raids and robberies, he couldn't bring himself to forget his promise to his mother. With tears rolling down his wide, simple face, he lowered the pistol, prepared to protect his younger brother one last time. Straining forward, with his pistol resting on the second step of the small back stoop, Doc watched the alley and waited for the big stranger who had brought him all the bad luck. He looked down at his blood-soaked shirt. It was still wet, with new blood constantly oozing out no matter how hard he pressed his hand against it.
Maybe Mace is right. Maybe I'm done for. But if I can stop this son of a bitch, then I can make it down to that doctor's office. I can get healed up and go find Mace.
Feeling it. Great sense of fatigue now. He closed his eyes for a moment to rest them. When he opened his eyes again, he was confused to find the day had grown dim. He blinked hard several times in an effort to see more clearly, barely able to make him out in the now hazy alley. He spotted the dark figure, moving carefully along the back of the store next door, with a hand that had now grown suddenly weak and heavy, he raised the pistol from the stoop. Jason ducked down against the back of the building when the bullet tore splinters out of the wood siding a foot over his head. He cautiously searched for the source, spotting the horses tied out back of the saloon. He waited for a long moment, but there were no more shots from behind the steps.
Waiting for me to show myself. Well, I ain't getting anything done sitting here.
He ran for the corner of the store. Reaching the corner in safety, he paused.
No shots. I can't figure that. Maybe they moved out of there.
He eased his head around the corner, rifle at the ready. He saw a body slumped over against the saloon steps. Cautiously, he stepped forward. There was no response from the shooter. Stopping in front of the man, with the toe of his boot, he pushed the body over on its back. It wasn't the man who led the band of cutthroats, Mace Cantrell.
Well, that's five of them. Where's the stud horse?
With thoughts of a possible ambush, Jason began a careful search of the saloon and the outbuildings behind it. There was no trace of Mace Cantrell. He had to conclude that the man had run. Five bodies showed evidence that the town of Paradise had been successfully defended. The threat was ended with Cantrell's flight. He would not likely show his face in this part of the country again. Maybe the people would return to their businesses and the town could survive. Jason was not satisfied, however, not with Cantrell running free. Maybe it was his many years as a deputy marshal and the fact that he had never quit on a job until it was finished. Or maybe it was a matter of vengeance for the murders committed by the outlaw. Whatever the reason, Jason Storm resolved to track the murderer down. He was inclined to start out after him immediately as he studied fresh tracks leading south along the farm road. But he was reminded then of Tom Austin. He would first have to see that the deputy was taken care of. When he got back to the stables, he found Ben Thompson's bartender, Gus, talking to Joe Galt.
Did you get him? I didn't hear but one shot.
Oh, but one. The leader, the one that did all the talking, hightailed it.
I came back to see if I could help. Looks like I was a little too late, but I figured I had to go out to Ben's place to see what I could do for his wife and the youngins.
Well, there's a lot of burying and cleanup that's gonna have to be done. So there's plenty to do. How's Tom, Joe? Was the doctor still there?
Yeah, Doc was still there, but I thought I was gonna have to break the door down before he was sure it wasn't some of them outlaws. He had a shotgun in his hand when he finally opened up. Tom's gonna be all right. Just need some time to do some healing.
I expect we need to get the word out to Hatfield and some of the others that it's safe to come on back to town.
Joe Galt studied the quiet man who had come to rid the town of outlaws.
Mister, I don't reckon there'd be any town left if it hadn't been for you.
Jason merely shrugged in response.
I don't know if the folks are going to be too scared to stay on here after what just happened, especially without Raymond Pryor to back them up. But I bet they might if you would take the job as sheriff.
I'm not looking for the job. I got something else I gotta do.
You're planning on going after Mace Cantrell, ain't you?
I reckon.
It was a question he was still debating with himself. The homestead he had just finished that summer and the few horses and cows he had managed to accumulate were on his mind as well. It was a start he didn't want to jeopardize by letting his stock roam free to stray while he was on a manhunt.
Hell, Jason, that man's long gone. He won't be back to cause us no trouble.
I can't help but feel sorry for anybody else that's in his path. He's got a lot of murdering to pay for, and he needs to be put down. Same as any mad dog.
I can't see how it's up to you to go after him. He's gone. He's somebody else's problem now. Right now, those of us still here have got to see about putting the town back together. If we still have a town.
Yeah, maybe you're right. But I reckon I'll see if I can track him down.
What are we going to do about Raymond Pryor's cattle? That's a sizable herd that needs tending to. Who owns them all now? Pryor and all his crew have all been wiped out.
I'll take responsibility for the cattle until the matter's settled, and a crew can be hired to herd them to Deer Lodge.
And talk it over with Tom and Hatfield. Maybe everybody could take shares in the cattle and split the money when they're sold.
That sounds good to me. I'll get everybody together and we can decide.
He was already considering the prospect of the town of Paradise becoming the property of the people of Paradise, along with all the land Raymond Pryor had deeded. That settled, Jason felt ready to start out after Mace Cantrell. John Swain worked away at a clod of dirt that seemed intent upon defying his hoe. When finally the stubborn boulder aside broke into several pieces, he paused to look around at his garden plot. It needed rain. There hadn't been much, less than normal according to folks who'd been here from the start of Raymond Pryor's endeavor. John was not one of the original settlers in Paradise Valley, having arrived 2 years later. He had not proven to be much of a farmer, although the pigs and the chickens in his garden had been sufficient to provide him and Rosanna with food for the table. Corn was supposed to be his money crop, but he hadn't had much luck with this year's yield. He remained there for a few moments, leaning on his hoe, thoughts of the incident in town still weighing heavily on his mind.
What'll happen to Paradise?
He recalled the scene in Hatfield's store. It had been the first time in his adult life he had stood face to face with men of such evil intent. He admitted his terror to himself. Had it not been for the timely arrival of Jason Storm, he would have been called upon to take action to defend his wife. And deep inside, where his darkest thoughts dwelled, he was not certain he could have protected her. He was not convinced he would have had the courage. He returned to his hoeing, only to pause once more when a man on horseback appeared on the path to the house. He was leading a pack horse, and when he saw John in the garden, he veered off the path and headed straight for him. Oblivious to the damage he'd caused to the garden rose. He was a stranger to John, but when he pulled up before him, John was swept with a cold, uncomfortable feeling. Tall and lean, with brooding eyes peering out behind dark brows, framed by jet black hair and whiskers, John felt his fingers go numb on the hoe handle.
I need supplies. Bacon, salt, beans, anything you got to eat, and I'm in a hurry.
John was at loss for a proper response.
I said I'm in a hurry, you damn ignorant sidebuster.
He pulled his pistol and pointed it at the hapless farmer.
Well, now, damn it, move, unless you want to be buried right here in this damn field.
John realized at that moment his fears were confirmed. This belligerent stranger was indeed one of the ruthless gang from Paradise. The thought froze the blood in his veins and it sent his mind reeling. The second encounter with uncut evil in as many days.
What do you want?
Something wrong with your ears? Damn it, I need food. Now march on up to that house and let's see what you got.
We don't have much.
John stumbled along before Mace's horses, his mind a pool of frightened thoughts.
I want whatever you've got.
It occurred to Cantrell then that he had seen this man before.
Ain't you the man in the wagon outside the saloon? Yeah, I remember you. You had a right fine-looking woman with you. Was she in the house?
John felt the frigid hand of fear clamp down on his gut. His courage was going to be tested once more. And this time, there was no hope of being saved by Jason Storm. This man would no doubt assault his wife. He had to do something to protect her, but he was helpless before the hardened outlaw behind him. Determined that he would not fail her again, he could think of nothing he could do except try to warn her.
Rosanna! Run! Run!
What the hell? Shut your mouth!
Run, Rosanna!
Damn you!
Mace kicked his horse hard. The animal knocked John to the ground. Cantrell reined the horse back. The shot drove into the ground next to John's head. Inside the house, some 40 yards from the garden,
Rosanna ran to the window.
God, no!
Her husband lay face down between the garden rows, with a man on horseback standing over him, pistol drawn.
No, no! He's dead, please, no!
There seemed no time to think of any way to defend herself, so she did as John had tried to warn her to do. She ran out the back door and fled toward the creek. Her only conscious thought was to escape the monster that had come to kill her. Splashing across the creek, she ran through the trees on the opposite bank, not even stopping when she lost a shoe in the soft sand of the creek. Running until she could no longer draw breath, she collapsed in a berry thicket, afraid the horseman was close behind her.
Get your ass up from there, I'm gonna shoot you where you lay.
With little choice, John got to his feet and started for the house. There was a shotgun over the fireplace. He wondered if Rosanna had run as he had implored, or if she might think to defend him with a shotgun. He hoped the hell she ran. When they reached the house, Mace dismounted and pushed John through the doorway before him, in case the woman he had warned might be waiting with a gun. After a quick look around, Mace determined there was no one there.
Yeah, looks like the little woman took off running. I see hogs out by the smokehouse, so I know you got plenty of salt pork. Where is it?
I don't have but a little bit left since I killed a hog.
Damn it, I told you I was in a hurry.
Mace cracked John across the skull with the barrel of his pistol, knocking the unsuspecting man to his knees.
In the smokehouse!
Get up, goddammit!
When John was slow in responding, Mace cracked him again with his pistol, this time opening a cut across the side of his face and temple. In a helpless stupor as a result of the blows, John collapsed to the floor again.
Stupid son of a bitch, get up!
He stood over the fallen man for a few moments longer before deciding John could not respond. After one more blow with his pistol just to make sure, he headed for the kitchen door toward the smokehouse. Noticing the shotgun over the fireplace, he snatched it off its pegs and took it with him, intending to head south, eventually reaching Three Forks and the pass that led from the valley directly to the Yellowstone River. Fearing for her life while grieving for her husband, Rosanna crawled deeper into the thicket of berry bushes, unmindful of the scratches on her arms and legs. The image of her husband lying in the garden rose would not leave her mind. Frantic with despair, she didn't know what to do. The only thing she could think of at the moment was to hide and hope the outlaw was not looking for her.
I should have done something to help him, but he was lying so still, face down. Oh, God!
Now she was swept under a heavy cloud of guilt, not just for the tragedy this day, but for their marriage as well. Though she would never have admitted it to him, she was sure John knew she accepted his proposal out of convenience. Her prospects of marriage were not great in the little town of Beaver. She was already past 30 at the time. She'd never considered herself attractive, but that was not the reason her prospects were slim. The younger men of Beaver went off to war, and very few returned, leaving the town with males either too young or too old. John offered her a future in a new community in Montana Territory, and she was determined to make him as good a wife as she possibly could. Although she felt no real passion for him, she did do the best she could. In time, she came to have a great affection for her husband, and she told herself she would settle for that. Very few people were fortunate enough to find that much, though she counted herself lucky to have a good man, one devoted to her happiness. John Swain was a good man, a gentle man, perhaps too gentle for this wild country in Montana. He didn't deserve to die this way. She knew not what to do or where to go. She was afraid to return to the house and almost equally fearful of remaining there in the thicket. Even now, the monster that killed John might be searching along the creek looking for her.
The woods around her slowly began to release the daylight as the sun sank lower in the western sky. Cool air swept across the creek bank. She welcomed the darkness. It would make it harder for him to find her. Although she did not expect it to happen, she fell asleep. Rosanna woke up with a start to find the early rays of the new sun filtering through the bushes. She had survived the night. Now she was stiff and hungry.
Is he still hunting me?
How long could she wait before cautiously approaching her home again? Thinking to go back to the creek to quench her thirst, she got up as far as all fours. She froze at the sound.
Oh, it's just a small animal. Maybe a coyote. We saw coyotes near the house. God, let it be that.
As she waited there, still on all fours, she tried not to breathe. The breathing seemed so loud over the pounding of her heart. Much to her dismay, the soft rustle of the bushes seemed to be getting closer. Then, the branches parted.
Don't be afraid, ma'am. I'm not gonna hurt you.
Jason recognized the woman at once, remembering her from the encounter with the two outlaws in Hatfield's store.
Jason Storm!
Rosanna almost fainted with relief upon seeing the countenance of her guardian angel. Suddenly, she felt too weak to stand. He pushed on through the bushes to help her to her feet.
He was here. One of those murderers, John, my husband, I think he killed him.
Your husband's bad hurt. Looks like he got pistol whipped, but he's alive. I carried him in the house. And when I went to the creek for some water to clean him up, I spotted your shoes stuck in the bank and I came looking for you.
Jason got Rosanna back to the house and prepared a meal as she tended to her husband. Shortly before they ate, John stirred slightly. Really, no more than a twitch, but it was a sign he might possibly take a turn for the better. Maybe even wake up. Jason fervently hoped so. But a half hour after the meal, John died. Rosanna went to check on him, and he was gone, his stark, staring countenance frozen forever in his death mask. There were no tears at once as Rosanna knelt beside the bed. Her mind was still in a confused state as she tried to close her husband's eyelids. It was not until later in the evening, when Jason built up the fire in the fireplace, that the magnitude of the loss of her husband came down upon her.
Oh, John.
Jason took her in his arms. With her head resting on his shoulder, she cried for John's suffering. She cried for the abrupt end of this chapter in her life. She cried because she was alone now. And she cried because of the guilt she bore for not loving the man with all her heart. When finally she exhausted her tears, she remained in Jason's embrace for a few minutes longer, reluctant to leave the safe haven of his solid shoulder. Jason couldn't control the thoughts flooding in his mind as he felt her body pressed against his, even as her late husband's body lay on the bed. He bore no improper thoughts beyond that. It was just so long since he held Mary Ellen close in much the same way. He silently apologized to his late wife and to Rosanna as well. For her part, when Rosanna realized she was still in his embrace after her tears had stopped, she immediately withdrew.
I'm sorry.
No need. I understand.
It was now time to make decisions. Jason had to move on. Mace Cantrell already enjoyed a large head start, and it was going to be difficult to track him down. Much more so now that Jason would have a cold trail to follow. At this point, Rosanna became a problem. He couldn't leave her here alone, but he couldn't stay with her either.
I'll bury John tomorrow morning in a spot you pick.
Thank you.
Have you thought about what you're going to do now?
No, I guess I can just stay here.
Well, you can't do that. You can't run this place by yourself. Don't you have any neighbors that you could stay with, at least until you decide something better?
He didn't like the idea of her alone on this remote farm. She gave his question a moment's thought.
No. The closest farm to ours is the Perkins place, and we don't see much of them.
Perkins? Is that the sheriff?
Yes. They keep pretty much to themselves. I guess the only person I've really made friends with is Lena Hatfield, but she lives in town.
Well, that sounds like the best place for you.
I don't want to impose on the Hatfields. I can stay here by myself.
You pack up your things tonight. I'll hitch up your wagon tomorrow morning. We'll go into Paradise and find a place for you.
Really? I'm not worried about staying here.
I am. I don't plan on riding after Mace Cantrell and worrying about you the whole time.
His comment caused mild surprise in both their minds and left a rather awkward silence behind it. He hoped she didn't think what he said was inappropriate.
I'll get some things together.
The first person they saw the next morning when they drove the wagon past the saloon was Joe Galt. He was standing in the middle of the narrow street, and when he turned to see Jason, he ran to meet him.
Whoa!
Did you catch him?
Jason saw Rosanna Swain and knew immediately something was wrong.
No. Have you seen Mr. and Mrs. Hatfield?
They're back. They're in the store now trying to put things back together, and Gus is cleaning up the saloon.
Galt turned his attention toward Rosanna.
Where's John? Is he all right?
John's dead.
Mace Cantrell?
That's right.
When Lena heard what had happened to John Swain, she immediately insisted Rosanna should stay with Fred and her. The relief in Rosanna's face was obvious, although she still protested her stay would at best be temporary until she could gather her emotions and return to her home.
There's no need to be in a rush to get back to your house. We got plenty of room for you, and you don't need to be by yourself out there anyway. You come in now. Jason Storm seems to have taken care of all your bags already.
Jason came out of the Hatfield home and passed the two ladies on the way to the wagon.
Excuse me, Lena. I'll just be a moment.
Of course.
Rosanna followed Jason to the wagon. Biscuit pawed the ground impatiently.
He didn't like being tied to the wagon. He's just set in his ways. You just mind your manners. We're going directly.
Jason turned back to Rosanna and found the woman gazing openly at his face. She stepped quickly up to embrace him, once again kissing him lightly on the cheek. Caught in an awkward situation, he wasn't sure how to respond. His natural reaction was to put his arms around her and hold her close to his chest, but he hesitated to do so.
You're gonna be all right here. Lena will take good care of you.
I owe you so much. I owe you my life. I don't know how I can thank you enough.
Jason suddenly found it difficult to think of the proper thing he should say.
You'll be all right here.
She stepped back then, releasing him.
You take care of yourself, Jason Storm.
Yes'm, I will.
Yeah. Are you coming back?
Well, I'll be back, but it might take a while.
Thoughts struck Jason uninvited and possibly improper. He realized he was more than casually interested in Rosanna's welfare. Was it wrong? After all, her husband's body was hardly cold. But he put the thought away. He knew what he had to do now. Find Mace Cantrell. Rosanna stood watching him until he disappeared into the trees between Lena's house and town. By the front door, Lena Hatfield studied her friend, having witnessed the farewell.
He's a curious man, isn't he?
Startled, Rosanna turned to reply.
I guess you could say that. I only know I might not be alive if it weren't for him.
Lena held the door open as Rosanna walked up the steps to the porch.
Yes, sir, he's a curious man. Nobody really knows much about Jason Storm. He just showed up here one day, looking for a place to light where most folks wouldn't find him.
She followed Rosanna into the house.
I put some coffee on the stove. Let's have a cup.
As soon as Rosanna sat at the table, Lena returned to the subject foremost in her mind.
Jason Storm, he sure seems to be familiar with guns, doesn't he? Nobody knows where he came from. He could be an outlaw for all anybody knows. Fred says Jason doesn't know much about growing crops or anything like that. Sure was a lucky day for Paradise when he showed up the other day, though.
He's a kind and gentle man.
Worried more than ever after Rosanna's declaration, Lena decided to stop beating around the bush.
A woman would be asking for trouble with a man like Jason Storm. I hope you aren't seeing too much in that man.
My goodness, Lena. John's been gone for less than 2 days. I'm just grateful for Jason Storm.
Well, as long as you remember that.
With Swain's farm a good full day's ride behind him, Cantrell eased up on the punishing pace he demanded from his horses. He felt it was safe to rest them now for a couple of hours, since he reasoned that the man chasing him had probably given up the hunt by now. What incentive would the big man have to continue to track him anyway?
They won the damn battle. They have their town back.
He figured he was in the clear, but just to be safe, he had been careful to hide his tracks as best he could when he first started off, crossing and recrossing streams, riding almost a quarter mile on a series of rocky ledges that led to a river. Confident he had covered his path sufficiently, he rode the horses hard for the rest of the afternoon straight south toward Three Forks, until the weary animals threatened to flounder. Just to reassure himself, he spent an hour at the top of a ridge searching his back trail.
Hell, that big son of a bitch most likely quit the chase as soon as he reached that farmer's house. If he got that far. Hell, I wish he would show his ass on that trail down there.
The fear he felt when he realized he was all alone after Bob and Lacey went down faded in his mind, giving way to his prior feeling of self-assurance.
Yeah, I'll be back on top. There'll be plenty of men who want to ride with Mace Cantrell. Soon as these animals rest up, I'll get the Bowens. I'll find men there.
Mace hoped Briny Bowen's trading post was still there. Many years ago, a couple of Frenchmen had built the trading post, a log building hard against the cliff. The back door opened directly into a series of limestone caves that served as safe rooms in the event of Indian attacks. The log structure had been set fire to twice and rebuilt each time to form the present-day saloon. According to what Mace had been told, Briny had taken it over some 20 years ago. It had since become a stopping place popular with men of all kinds with one thing in common. They were all on the wrong side of the law. Mace felt sure he would be in his element there. A wiry man of uncertain age, Briny Bowen sat in a rocking chair beside a huge stone fireplace. The light of the fire reflected off his shiny pate, which extended halfway the length of his skull before reaching the thin, lifeless gray hair that hung down to his shoulders. Horace Blevins came from behind the counter with a fresh bottle of whiskey for the poker game in progress in the back room.
About goddamn time.
I thought I was gonna die of thirst.
Briny paid the racket no mind. His hearing wasn't as sharp as it once was, and it was certainly not as sharp as the 14-inch hunting knife he always wore. Briny continued to stare in the fire as Horace came back.
How many is that, Horace?
Three.
Switch him over on the next one.
There was no sense in wasting good whiskey on them. After killing three bottles of whiskey, it was unlikely they'd know the difference.
Yes, sir.
Briny often joked that the last time Horace was excited was when the midwife smacked him on his ass at birth.
There ain't but one bottle of that blue cork under the counter. I drink it pretty strong. Reckon I need to get some more out of the storeroom.
The watered-down spirits were identified by the blue mark on the cork. Most of it was for sale to Indians and white men already too drunk to know what they were drinking.
It wouldn't hurt, I reckon. Make sure you keep count of them bottles.
I'm keeping count. Be right back.
Horace exited through an open door behind the counter. Hearing the front door open, Briny took his attention away from the fire long enough to see who came in.
He had to think for a moment, but he knew he'd seen the man before. Tall, rangy fellow with black hair and whiskers framing a scowl of displeasure. Since Horace had gone to the storeroom, Briney dragged himself out of his rocker and went to the counter.
Give me a drink of your real whiskey.
Long years past being intimidated by any of the many lawless customers to visit his saloon, Briney didn't respond at once. Instead, he took a long look at the scowling face, searching his memory, which was still as sharp as it had been when he was a young man.
You was in here 2 or 3 years ago. If I recollect correctly, there was 4 or 5 others with you.
He reached behind him and took a shot glass from the shelf behind the counter, and then filled it from a bottle from under the counter.
What happened to your gang? They run off and leave you?
You might say that. I reckon they're riding for the devil right now.
You're running into a little trouble. You on the run from the law?
They ain't coming here. I ain't got no lawman on my tail. I just want another damn drink of whiskey.
Mace slammed the money down on the counter and set the empty glass over toward Briney. His show of impatience appeared to have no effect on the old man, who casually raked the money off the counter and refilled the glass.
You just passing through, or you figuring on staying a while?
I ain't thought about it yet.
Horace returned from the storeroom with 3 bottles.
Who's in the back room?
Some fellas rode in from Butte. 4 of them. They got a poker game going.
Just then, the back room door opened, and a squat bull of a man walked directly to the end of the bar to confront Horace. He was holding the bottle of whiskey that Horace had just delivered.
What the hell kind of watered-down piss is this stuff? We sure as hell ain't that drunk. You pay good money, we expect to get real whiskey. Not some of this stuff you sell to Injuns.
Horace shot a worried glance in Briney's direction, and Briney nodded patiently.
That bottle must have been on the wrong shelf, Horace. Fetch another bottle for the gent.
While Horace replaced the bottle, the squat customer leaned on the bar and gazed at the other 2 men at the counter. His gaze stopped abruptly when it met that of Cantrell, who was concentrating intensely upon him. He was stumped at first, but it suddenly dawned upon him.
Mace Cantrell!
His utterance prompted Mace's memory, and he put the name and the face together a split second later.
Stump! Stump Wyatt!
Well, I'll be gone to hell! I thought you was dead a long time ago.
A wide grin spread the width of his jaw, and he came forward to extend a hand.
Well, I thought you went under with Bloody Bill and Booker and the rest of them Rose Hill boys.
Cantrell mirrored Stump's grin as the 2 shook hands.
It'd take more than a company of Yankee soldiers to put us out of business. Hell, Booker and One Eye are sitting in the back room right now.
Stump turned his head toward the door.
Hey, Booker! Get out here!
His shout carried enough urgency to cause his friends to charge through the door with guns drawn.
Ha! Look what the cat drug in!
Like Stump, his friends had to pause for a moment to be sure. Booker was the first to speak.
Cantrell? I thought you was dead. Hell, somebody said they saw you get hit in the same volley that got Bill. Ain't that right, One Eye?
The grinning man with a patch over One Eye shook his head in disbelief.
That's a fact, all right. The word had it that you and your brother both went down with Bloody Bill. Of course, we didn't hang around to answer no roll call after they shot us to pieces. Me and Booker and Stump hid under that bridge till they started out after you boys. Then we lit out down that creek and never looked back.
Figured you was dead, though. They must have got Doc.
No, me and Doc both made it. Well, I was riding right behind Bill when we charged across that bridge and hit the ambush in the trees. We made it through, but Bill turned around and started back. I reckon I would have followed him, but Doc cut me off, took hold of my bridle and led me straight out the other side of the Union camp. Yeah, well, when I looked back, I saw Bill get shot in the head. And when I saw his empty saddle, well, there was no use for me and Doc to go back.
The rough faces of the former comrades literally shone as they resurrected memories of what they considered their glory days. Booker shook his head in amazement.
What in the hell are you doing in Montana? Is Doc still with you?
He was, up to a couple of days ago. He was shot down in a little job that went bad.
Booker nodded to indicate he understood. He automatically assumed that whatever job Cantrell was involved in would be on the same side of the law he operated on.
That's a shame. I always liked Doc.
Yeah, Doc was one of the best.
May saw no reason to confess he had abandoned his wounded brother to make good his own escape.
Well, what the hell have you been up to? It's been, what, 13, 14 years since we charged across that damn bridge into that Yankee ambush? Damn, we was all just boys when that happened.
Stump took the bottle of good whiskey.
Come on, we'll go in the back room and talk.
As he led the way, Stump nodded toward a man standing by the door.
Now this here's Jimmy Peterson. He rides with us. Jimmy, meet Mace Cantrell. He rode with us and Bloody Bill Anderson.
The reunion consumed a couple more bottles of Briny's best whiskey as the old comrades exchanged stories.
Things went all right for a good while. There were plenty of little towns to raid. Some with banks were like picking cherries off a tree. There's too damn much law out here now. We kept getting farther and farther north till we wound up here in Montana Territory. And damned if it ain't got too civilized to make a decent living here. Lately, we turned to cattle rustling as the safest way to turn profit.
Cattle, huh? I just happen to know where there's a sizable herd of cattle not 3 days' ride from here. And there ain't nobody tending them. All you'd have to do is go up there and take them.
This claimed their attention. So Mace went on to tell him what had taken place in Paradise Valley and why he had run.
And you say one man took out five of your gang?
He just had a hell of a lot of luck on his side. He bushwhacked my boys, and I couldn't take him and the townsfolk at the same time, so, well, I had to run. If it had been just me and him, it would have been different, and that's a fact.
One Eye, content to listen to that point, interjected a question.
There was a bank holdup in Helena a little while back that went bad. One man was shot, but the robbers didn't get any of the money and had to run for it. Was that you boys that tried to pull that one?
No.
Mace was lying.
If it had been me and my boys, we never left without the money.
Let's talk some more about that herd of cattle roaming around without nobody to watch them. You reckon that fella you was talking about has his eye on taking them cattle?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. I thought about going back for him myself, but I needed a crew to help drive them.
Well, you found one. What do you say, boys?
Let's get it.
Sure.
Booker turned to Mace.
The first thing we'll do is take care of that troublesome son of a bitch.
He stuck his hand out to Mace.
What do you say, Mace? Are we in business?
Hell yes. Suits me.
Mace thought about the fearsome figure of the man who destroyed his partners and ran him out of town. It would be a different story this time when he paid Paradise a return visit.
Now, I reckon we need to set some things straight before we get started. I've been calling the shots for me and the boys up now. From what you say, you've had to say so with your men, which you ain't got no more.
Mace grinned knowingly. He'd expected some debate over the pecking order of the new alliance.
Yeah. Last boss I had was Bloody Bill Anderson, and I don't reckon I'll have another one after him. Since I'm the one who knows where the cattle are, I'd be within my rights to claim I'll be the stud horse on this deal.
He noticed the squint that appeared in Booker's eyes.
But I figure ain't nobody boss on this deal. Everybody has a say, all right?
One Eye and Stump glanced over at Booker to see his reaction to the suggestion. A smile broke out on Booker's face, indicating that he was going to permit this challenge to his role as a leader.
I reckon. We'll hit the trail first thing in the morning. That all right with you, partner?
Yeah.
What was this feller's name that came after you?
I don't know. Never heard anybody call his name. All I know is he's a big son of a bitch and he don't seem to back down.
Good. We ought to have no trouble finding him then.
Still going on gut feelings, Jason followed the Jefferson River, bypassing a small settlement without so much as a cursory stop at the general store there. He knew where Cantrell most likely would have headed if he came through Three Forks, where all the outlaws went, if Briny Bowen was still alive. Since he had no real trail to follow and was just riding a hunch, he fully realized that Three Forks might be a dead end if he hadn't figured Cantrell correctly. He hated the thought of the murdering thief getting away, but if he had guessed wrong, he had no other idea where to look for him. He paused to consider what he would do if things did turn out that way.
Back to paradise, I reckon. At least I made a start there.
He was reluctant to admit it, but he also had a certain interest in seeing if Rosanna was all right.
Just curious.
Jason approached the trading post. It had been a while, but the shabby building still huddled there with its backside up against the cliff. He guided Biscuit toward the hitching rail in front of the building, reining in, and then he stepped down from the saddle, pulled his rifle from the scabbard. A quick glance around the small clearing indicated he might be the sole customer. A couple of horses stood in a corral adjacent to a weathered barn, but there was no sign of any person. Jason propped his rifle on his shoulder and opened the door.